Welcome to a special edition of Straight Talk Africa. I'm your host, Vincent McCorry. Today, we'll delve into the tech culture on the African continent. We'll explore how tech entrepreneurs are building a thriving ecosystem for their industry in Africa and how big tech is supporting that. We'll look at why the pros want entrepreneurs who walk the talk and why it's important for big tech companies and small startups to be mindful about the choices they make. This episode is part of Startup Africa, Voice of America's award-winning TV series about tech startups across the African continent.
Is there a downside to big investment in Africa? No more than, well, It's a tricky question.
So for me, big tech is something highly controversial. I see the value of it, but I also see that Africans should stop playing second fiddle to some of these organizations and have the confidence to start building our own technology.
I guess paying it forward is a mantra we have within Microsoft. It's a mantra we have within the Africa Transformation Office, because we are keen on making sure we build sustainable solutions. I fear that some of the gains that we've made could dissipate. So for instance, we are trying to build a critical mass of great young Ghanaian people who are patriotic. A lot of the gains that we've made might dissipate because things are not moving as fast as people want to move.
My name is Brian Afande. I'm the co-founder and managing director of Black Rhino VR. We are an extended reality technology company. Extended reality is a spectrum of three key technologies. They're called immersive media. So you have a virtual reality, which is really a computer-generated environment where you can interact with it using a head-mounted display unit that you put above your head. And then you have augmented reality, which is really the superimposition of digital images in the real world. And then you have mixed reality, which is you wearing wearables like your spectacles, but then digital information is superimposed in the real world, but you can see the real world at the same time. These whole technologies are part of the extended reality spectrum, which is called the XR spectrum. But we as Black Rhino specialize in two of those verticals, which is augmented reality and virtual reality. What excites me every day when I wake up in the morning is that I have a huge responsibility on my shoulder. And this responsibility is based on the fact that we have to demonstrate the power of extended reality to not just Kenya, but Africa. We have to demonstrate its resilience. We have to demonstrate its socioeconomic impact. And every day when I wake up in the morning, I'm driven for this and to make sure that a lot of people not just know about the technology, but change their mindsets about the technology itself. And I wanted to address some of the, you know, developmental challenges that we have in Africa. I feel like Africans need to play a role, not just consuming, but producing and manufacturing when it comes to extended reality. Back in 2017, I almost closed down the company based on the fact that, you know, technology was still highly considered nascent, but there was no potential for it in the industry. And I did a feasibility study and a SWOT analysis on what the positioning would be. And I was trying to find out what could be the right positioning for the company. And I had small solutions that I had deployed in the market. But the first organization that actually gave me a chance was Meta. And they flew me and my business partner to their campus in Palo Alto. We went through a whole workshop and training. They gave us the confidence and they commissioned us to work on a project in Cape Town in South Africa. And I love working with this organization because their culture sometimes seems very inclusive. And I've benefited from working with an organization that has such an inclusive personality to diversity. Apart from money, apart from networking opportunities, Meta has really been a partner that I feel has helped us scale. Even though any partnership has teething problems, you know, there's ways we can be able to improve our partnerships. But I must say that the resources we've been granted so far has not just helped me as an individual, it's helped a whole ecosystem. For instance, one of the projects that we just concluded last month with Meta was a hackathon that happened in 17 African countries simultaneously. And we called it the African Metathon. And this was a metathon that was that Meta put in resources for young individuals to develop use cases of the metaverse and extended reality. And it really trickles down to the grassroots level, because these are individuals who've been working in silos, but have now confidence to come in spaces like where we are to build solutions. The first team got about $10,000 in prizes. So it's very important to see that the resources are actually not trickling down to companies like us, but are trickling down to the individuals that matter. In the next 10 years, I want to see big tech being African companies, giants coming with solutions. Let the unicorns, big tech solutions, come from Africans, by Africans, for Africans. Let us start exporting big tech to the global south, because the global south is huge. Let us start extending our solutions to the global north. So for me, big tech is something highly controversial. I see the value of it, but I also see that Africans should stop playing second fiddle to some of these organizations and have the confidence to start building our own technology. I feel there's a lot of investment in Africa because it's only one thing: growth. By 2025, half of the world's youth population between 18 to 25 is going to be based in Africa. My friend, this is growth potential. And a lot of investment is coming to Africa primarily based on that. Not just the resources that we have, but the people is a huge resource. And what do you do with this resource is a fundamental question that this organization asks. So they're trying to tap into the rich resources that we have, which is the people. I feel like sometimes as Africans, we might have a fixed mindset that doesn't allow us to believe that an individual running an extended reality company or an individual doing animation or coding can have a future in that. The reality is an individual who's done extended reality can add value in some sectors of films, in music. We can infuse our technology in any cultural and creative subsectors. And I feel like this is where success is, when we change our mindset to a more growth-minded perspective and mindset. This is where the value is.
You good? Oh, look at him, I'm sorry.
Is there a downside to big investment in Africa? No more than, well, oh, oh,
boy. I know.
Okay. It's a tricky question. I think the intentions are fair, right? And I think, however, I would say that people are not always conscious about some of the tertiary impact, right? Like, they didn't think about the first impact, the secondary impact, but like there's the tertiary impact that people don't always think of. And so we could see it driving people into worse conditions, unfortunately. That's the reality, right? So I think, like, if we have to play the, like, the worst thing that can happen kind of scenario, then it is that big tech companies move in and there is a pushing people into worse. There is like a sort of division, even deeper class division could happen, especially when tech companies begin to like pay higher salaries than some of the other companies that exist on the continent. And then you look at people going worse into poverty who may have been able to make a fair wage. So driving that economic impact is always a challenge, right? I think that I'm hopeful that there's more upside than downside, because if they continue to invest in African started led bred home businesses, then those people hopefully will do right by the people who live there, right? And I think that's the goal of like investing in diversity anyway, is that people of color typically hire people of color, you know? So if Africans can hire more Africans, then hopefully we can see the upside more than we're seeing the downside. So just as much as, you know, people are running there and we do look at that and say, hey, are you going to be fair to the people that live there? Are you investing in and thinking about how you treat the local community? There are people out here, nonprofits and other organizations, also working to make sure that that happens. And when people are employed and able to make a wage, a living wage, then hopefully we'll see some corruption changeover. And we'll see some, maybe a build a better government be built in some areas. If industry can build, absolutely there's money to be made, right? So I think that in that way, I'm hopeful. I'm also a serial optimist. I have to let you know, like, I'm always trying to figure out what the upside is.
When Google deploys that funding to a founder, not only does it help them grow their company, hire more people, but maybe more importantly, it attracts other investors. So a lot of investors who had been dragging their feet or who had even said no on investing in that company, many times when they hear that Google's in, they say, I'm in. And so that first $5 million that Google deployed, founders right away in 6 months' time raised an additional $50 million. So it had this kind of 10x multiplier effect for founders.
Big tech has allowed information to be democratized, highly democratized, it's accessible.
Oh, yeah.
Whether or not it's on your phone, like you said, there's all these social media platforms where people can be able to communicate with others across the globe. So the world seemingly has become smaller. Customer is king, you can pull up any information you need. And I feel like because culturally we are so exposed to what's happening in the West, what's also happening with the presence of big tech, I feel like there's some form of cultural dilution.
Yes, but a lot of it.
Ultimately, the cultural dilution might lead to, because I believe culture evolves.
Yes, a new culture.
Exactly,
yes.
It will lead to a new culture.
I think it has led.
Exactly.
You know, we're already having a new culture. Should African leaders, should they be concerned that the big tech is changing the society?
I think change is more or less like a double-edged sword.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's positive change and negative change.
Yeah.
I feel like it's important for us to realize that what enriches technology is really the human being, and we are the epicenter of the tech, right? Mm-hmm. Ideally, in the real world, I feel like, yes, tech leaders in Africa should try to see how the tech can be able to benefit, especially when you look at the youth in Africa.
Yeah.
Statistics show by 2025, half of the world's youth population between the age of 18 and 24 years old is going to be in Africa.
Yeah.
Gone are those days where old school business models are applicable
now. They're not, yeah.
You know, so you're looking at a huge workforce. Mm-hmm. And what are we going to do with this workforce if not pivot on innovation and technology?
Exactly, yeah.
So I feel like it's a great enabler. I feel like it has to have the right sort of policies to govern how technology can be used. And also in educational settings, reforms, how do we even start reforming education in such a way that big tech plays a huge role in how we can create more intuitive learning experiences, not just enrich learning experiences, but more immersive learning experiences that will guarantee higher retention. Mm-hmm. No, these are things.
And creativity. But we just need to be alert and say, how are we using tech? How can we use it to our advantage? You said the population is young. Kenya alone, 40% are below 15 of the Kenyan population only. So what are we, and then, you know, our issues with the job market.
Yes.
Use this big tech more rich than others. So it's,
how do we? I totally agree with you.
In times of change, when the world seems uncertain, and what we hear doesn't reflect what we see, we seek the truth. When we are told only part of the story, we lose trust. In moments of crisis, our dreams, hopes, and wishes for a better tomorrow depend on a free press. At Voice of America, we bring you the stories that people take risks to see. We connect the world and unite it with truth. At Voice of America, We show you the whole picture.
You're watching VOA's Red Carpet. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. Thank you so much for joining us each week right here on Red Carpet. We bring you the latest in...
My name is Atu Olzanapia. I'm from Elmina. I grew up in Kumasi. I live in Accra. I care a lot about Ghana, and I love Africa. What's that kind of thing? I'm a social entrepreneur. I lead the Ghana Think Foundation. And I've also been working a lot around the intersection of youth and digital over the last 10 years. For Ghana Think, what we try to do every day is to mobilize and organize talent for the primary benefit of Ghana. And that is driving towards our vision of building a critical mass of young Ghanaians who are patriotic, passionate, positive, proactive, progressive, and most importantly, productive. For Ghana Think, I think when we started it in 2004, 2005, and maybe for the first couple of years, it looked like a labor of love that, you know, we're doing for Ghana. But gradually, it's grown from that into a not-for-profit that we work on, and it's grown into a social enterprise and a business that we also work on. The key thing is to make it sustainable. Currently, in our structure, we have three co-founders that remain active. So below that, we have like an executive in Ghana. Then we have our program teams. And then we have teams in locations. So we have a Kaswa team, Accra team, Tamale team. So we have 12 of those teams. We run on volunteer membership. Right. So like no one is full time with Ghana Think. And because we also run it as a social enterprise, we continuously want to prove to ourselves that this is a good business. I think I'm concerned and I fear that some of the gains that we've made could dissipate. So for instance, we are trying to build a critical mass of great young Ghanaian people who are patriotic. Over the years, we feel and we see that some people who may have been like that are losing interest, right? Because they think the system is not changing. So that's something that I fear a lot, that a lot of the gains that we've made might dissipate because things are not moving as fast as people want to move.
Sometimes we don't see it, but then change is actually happening, you know, bit by bit, one person at a time. We are not paid, we are volunteers. So I think it's just the passion, you know, to bring people together and to bring people together in a way that allows them to connect.
Since 2010, I have become a part of the Ghana Think Foundation, where I joined the team that organized the Cape Coast events. So for like 10 years, I've been leading this team, and this is my fifth backcamp in Kaswa, creating opportunities where people can learn, share, and network. And these three keywords have been our guiding principle. And for me, that has also been my personal connection to the need for lifelong learning. Today, I am who I am because I attended my very first backcamp.
At first, I actually didn't know how to do management and other things. I was allowed to give my form of view, ask questions, and know the mindset of whoever is coaching me. So more or less, like, I've had a coach, a coach that I've lost in about 20 years, but I've had it just in the space of 30 minutes.
It's really natural when you get to interact with people physically. So I like the interaction part of it. The people really came down to earth to our level and made things simple. They were welcoming, question-wise, suggestion-wise. And it was a big discussion full of fun and a lot of lessons.
I perceive that in the next 5 years, 10 years, we would have raised a critical mass of people who are change makers in their societies, in their communities, in their workplace. They don't just, you know, go and be a cog in the wheel, but then they're actually people who have the interest of this country at heart, and they actually want to be, they want to make a difference. They want to be change makers.
We benefited from Google a lot. Unofficially, we benefited a lot from Twitter. If even in the past, we've actually gotten some financial support through Facebook for ads, especially because of what we do and the kind of people that we target, young, tech-savvy, driven, hardworking young people. A lot of the businesses that appreciate the kind of people that we engage, sometimes are big tech. Traditionally, in Ghana, we struggle to get lots of local businesses to understand what we are doing and partner us or support us. So just because of the innovative side of things and that forward-thinking, you know, future-ready side of things, I think, you know, our position has definitely improved by working with big tech folk, right? So I think, for me, the main downside would be taking competent labor and talent away from our own, I guess, Ghanaian-owned businesses. My own personal vision is to be remembered like the way we remember Nkrumah, the way we remember Kofi Annan to a certain extent, the way we remember Mandela, but not be in politics. So, you know, there's never been a point where I was like, this is not going to work. It's just, you know, what can we bring to make this work well or work faster?
Really appreciate it.
I mean, we're empowering them with financial stability, right? If you think about kind of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, we need kind of financial stability at the base before we can start thinking about more philosophical things like meaning, right? So that's one of the ideas of why we created a company called Meaningful Gigs. We handle the financial stability. You can start thinking about more philosophical questions and then about how to do more meaningful work in your life. You have choice. And choice is so important because when I was growing up, I was just trying to make the next buck. That's all I needed. Like, how can I earn enough money to do whatever I need to buy food to pay my rent? And now, because we're paying people 5 to 10x what they would locally, they get to live good lives and then have choices that they wouldn't have before. And we started back in 2019, I was always preaching that remote work was the future. So I came to America because at the time you couldn't even earn $5,000 a year in Ghana. So I needed to leave in order to come here. And so I had to leave my friends and family and come over here. But what I understand now with the internet is that you can be in Lagos, so you can be in Accra and earn just as much as somebody sitting in New York or San Francisco. So you say the challenge about policy. Well, being online and doing work on the internet is not really regulated by policy, right? If you have an internet connection, you can work. And so then you ask about internet. We focus on specific markets like Lagos, Nairobi, South Africa. Most people there have stable internet connections. But we're also watching what the world is doing and all the infrastructure that's being built. And that allows us to scale too. Yeah, so our vision, like I said, it's to create 100,000 skilled jobs. And ultimately, that's to build a middle class. And what we really focus on is the customer. So I know we've talked a lot about Africa, and we've talked about African talent, but we always start with our customer. And our customers are creative folks at these big enterprise brands, because if we can give them what they need, they end up hiring more creatives, and then it creates more jobs. So our vision is to create 100,000 skilled jobs, but mainly by serving these big brands and these companies and helping them navigate uncertainty and do all the creative work that they need to get done. Yeah, we've benefited because those companies love working with our creatives. And so they're paying the same rates that they would pay somebody in San Francisco or in Ohio. And so that means they're able to pay these creatives. The creatives are making 5 to 10x more than they would in their local environments. But these companies are getting so much value and learning that, like, Africa isn't about charity or poverty, but they have really skilled, diverse talent there. Ultimately, when I think about brain drain, for us, we're not promoting that people leave Africa, right? We know that if you're sitting in Lagos and we connect you with a job at Google or Facebook, you then can leverage that to any job in Africa, 9 times out of 10, right? Like, you become more empowered to do more work and then train and upskill and help the next generation. And that's one of the important things that we're doing too. We're making sure that the people that are on our platform pay it forward and give it back to the younger creatives that are up and coming.
Pay it forward for me is very, it's personal to me. And I say it's personal to me because I wouldn't be where I am today if I didn't have a number of managers guiding me through various personal and professional challenges, but also in giving me the right platform to be able to shine and build my potential. So paying it forward for me for the startups is something I take personally when I meet some of the founders and we sit down and I talk to them from their ways of setting up the startups in thinking of the exit, not setting it up just to solve your problem in the beginning, but thinking about it around as you expand your solution, as you expand your service. How do you think about your growth beyond your market? And I'll call those mentoring sessions in terms of paying it forward. So I guess paying it forward is a mantra we have within Microsoft. It's a mantra we have within the Africa Transformation Office, because we are keen on making sure we build sustainable solutions for the various segments of customers you're dealing with, be it the multinational organizations that are setting up their businesses here or the startup founders that are setting up their ideas in Africa, or indeed the SMEs across Africa.